Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, and that is exactly what we're going to be talking about today. What are your belief systems? Do you like magic? Well, we're going to touch on a little bit of everything. My very special guest today is Richard Bach. Those of you who are familiar with Jonathan Livingston Seagull, the fabulous book, Illusions, The Handbook of the Messiah, and there's so many more that Richard has written, but he's got a new one out that is absolutely mesmerizing, and it's titled, appropriately, Hypnotizing Maria. Richard, welcome to the show.
Donna, thank you for having me on. What an introduction. Wow.
Well, I just think you're marvelous. I love the way you write. I like your descriptions, and I really enjoy that you put so much of yourself in your stories. And, of course, that's my biased opinion in having...
Oh, I love your biased opinion. Please go on.
Okay, I will do. Richard, I want to ask you a personal question.
Sure.
When you started writing,
yeah,
because you have this wonderful relationship with flying and so many other aspects of life, why did you find it important to write? Do you have personalities that are around you that fill your mind with ideas? What is it that creates that magic that enables you to push that mental button to on and off you go?
You're absolutely right. I do have those other personalities. I call them alternate selves. I think that each of us has many, many levels within us, and each of them have something to say. I didn't think it was going to be that way. I started writing because I took a class in high school in creative writing in order to get out of the English literature course, which I thought would be awful. And our destiny is led by these strange coincidences, and my life changed. I went into that classroom. A teacher was the football coach who also happened to be a writer. He wrote articles for magazines. He was writing a series of books for young people about a football coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he did something strange. He said, "I know why you're in here. You're in here to get out of the English literature class." We said, "Oh, how could you possibly know that?" And he said, "Now, that's fine." He said, "But the only way you're going to get an A in this class is to show me the check from some piece of writing you have written and sold this semester."
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And we said, "That's not fair. We're just little high school kids. How can we?" And he just cut us off. He said, "There's nothing wrong with a B." Wow. That really got to a few of us, and I started writing like crazy. I managed to sell a story to the Sunday supplement of the local newspaper. And they paid me $25, and I put that check on John Gartner's desk. I said, "There," and he said, "Dick, here's your A." Bam. Just like, I didn't have to work anymore the whole semester. I didn't know what he was doing until after I had been in and out of the Air Force, was trying to hold a job, couldn't hold a job anywhere more than 9 months long. I go crazy with boredom.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remembered, at last, that teacher's lesson came through to me. I remembered when I was a kid, somebody paid me money. They didn't pat me on the head and give me nice words. They paid me a check for something I had written. If I had done that then, well, I know what I love to do now. I love flying, right? I can write about flight. And that's how it all started. And then story by story by story, gradually becoming book by book by book, I was introduced to those levels within me that have something to say. I'm not an author. I don't invent stories. I don't make things up. That's the job of that other thing within me. What I am, I'm the writer.
Mm-hmm.
They sit there and they shine these little movies on my mind, and I sit in front of a computer and type as fast as I can type. The only thing that's a challenge for me is they say, don't start writing until we tell you to go, because we're working on this stuff. And I'm very impatient. So I'll get the gist of an idea, and I'll start writing the thing, and it won't work. And like this with Hypnotizing Maria happened, well, 5 years ago, after, I don't know what, 60 years of after having some really interesting experience with hypnotism, all of a sudden this story says something really worthwhile could be said about the relationship between the suggestions we accept from a hypnotist and the suggestions we accept from all the world around us. I thought that's just fascinating. So, of course, I sat down and I wrote chapter one.
Mm-hmm.
And I started writing that chapter, and the little voices within said, well, go ahead if you want to, but lots of luck. And sure enough, chapter one didn't work. Well, that, I know how to fix that. You throw it away and you start the next page, chapter one. You start over again, doing a different direction. I kept doing that. Chapter one after chapter one went nowhere. I mean, some of them were nice chapters, but they didn't catch the incandescence of the idea that they had just given me a little preview. I thought it was going to be a story about a hypnotist, and the working title in my computer was The Hypnotist. Wrong, completely wrong. And then 18 months ago, wham, they said, okay, it's ready. And I started typing. All of a sudden, everything just fell together. All of a sudden, I was watching this story happen. It's not a hypnotist at all, Richard. It's an aviator. And he's learning about it. He doesn't know it already. He's learning about it from a background that I know very, very well. I was a flight instructor for years, and I know what my character's life is like. As a flight instructor, you very rarely touch the controls, but you're doing a lot of talking. You say, just give me a 180-degree turn here and climb to 2005. That's all you do, and then the student does her best or his best to make that happen, and you say, well, okay, you could just maybe use a little more rudder at the start of that, and so forth. It's all words. And here, that's the way this story happened, that my character hears on the radio a woman in distress. Her husband, the pilot, has collapsed at the lost consciousness at the controls of the airplane, and she can't fly. All she knows is that he always presses that little microphone button when he talks to somebody. So my Jamie Forbes, my flight instructor character, is flying along in his airplane, and he hears this voice. Somebody, God help me, my husband's died. Well, she sounds pretty close, and he asks where she took off and where she was headed, and he manages to find her, and wham, he's down immediately. He joins on her wing, just like flying formation in the military, which he had done.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. All he has is words. All he has is ideas to send across that 50 feet between her airplane and his. And he's just like he does all the time. He's really calm. He doesn't have to touch the control. He said, if you just ease back a little bit on that control wheel right in front of you, you see how the nose comes up just a little bit? That's the airplane likes this. Just a nice, gentle climb. And we'll turn back over to Cheyenne. We'll land, get your husband on the ground, get someone to take care of him. This calm voice, and it's all, for him, it's just part of his job. He does this all the time. So, of course, he leads her back, and she makes a very nice touchdown. He says, okay, just pull the throttle back. There's an ambulance coming out on the runway behind you right now. Let the airplane stop. And wham, he doesn't even land. He's off to where he's going, which is North Platte, Nebraska, and then on down to Florida. And he thinks nothing about it until the next day someone puts a newspaper story up on the bulletin board of the flight office where he's staying overnight with his airplane. And the lady says, he hypnotized me. My husband collapsed at the controls, and I can't fly an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And this man appeared out of nowhere, and when I woke up, I was safe on the ground. He hypnotized me. And he reads that, and he laughs. Hypnotized, what a silly thought that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then some events happen to him that open up for him this connection between the stage hypnotism that we see, we take for entertainment, and the everyday hypnotism that we allow into our thoughts. Someone said, in fact, I think there have even been psychological tests where someone has gathered a group of students and said, okay, now when this next student walks in the door, everyone, just take your time, but just mention when you talk to her that she's not looking very well today. And let's watch what happens. And, of course, you know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You get that, those suggestions. And then, unless we're on our guard, unless her reaction, when someone said, you're not looking so well today, unless she came back and said, well, that's strange because I'm feeling terrific. But most of us, unless we're on our guard, we'll listen to them. Well, they must be seeing something. All of a sudden, we start feeling bad, sure enough.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. And we have that power to accept or to reject suggestions that come at us from television advertisements, from billboards, from friends, from strangers, from newspapers, from our own thought. All those suggestions pass through the gateway that we control. This idea was so fascinating to me. And here this part of me had been working on it, I don't know, for 60 years, since I was a kid and checked out of the library how to hypnotize. And I remember being startled when I checked that book out. Why would they let a 13-year-old kid check this book out? This has got to be powerful stuff. And sure enough, three or four of us started playing with hypnotism when we were kids, and remarkable things happened. All of a sudden, they were pushing needles through my hand, and I didn't feel a thing. What's going on? Whoa! the little monster. But I remembered that. I remembered that early experience. And that inner creative part of us doesn't care about time. It's just working. It catches that idea. It's working away on it. It's watching what happens during our lives. And then if we choose to be writers in search of ideas, every once in a while it'll hand us an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be an idea that maybe took half a century for it to create, but it's fresh and new as sunrise.
You're making some wonderful comments, Richard. I think that it's very difficult for most of us, unless we have that conscious presence in our thought attitudes, where we say, wait a minute, what's really going on in this moment?
Yes.
And it can be at any time.
Yeah.
And there are these subtleties, and I know that with myself, when I reflect back over some of the stupid things that I became associated with when I was younger, we can all talk about things like this.
Oh, sure, yeah.
If we're consciously present with ourselves, then we'll go, what really happened? And all of a sudden, we realize we have to take a positioning of responsibility.
Yes.
There are experiences that we will bring into our space because we, for some reason, think that's what we're supposed to do.
Yep.
And these subtleties of messages when you're young, you're not aware because you really don't have discipline. Part of childhood is learning discipline if you're fortunate enough to get it. But you may not be happy with it, but it's a good thing. The reality is to learn how to think, to learn how to be attentive.
Yeah.
It's something that most children already have, and then they're untaught. That's a Donna word.
Yeah.
They are untaught, and then they have to go through all kinds of experiences, and one day you wake up and you go, you know, somewhere along the line I've screwed things up. What in the world have I been doing? And then you
go
around
right.
And you talk to other people and you say, but this isn't working. Why not? I don't know.
Yeah.
And you find that others are in this fog.
Sure.
They're in the fog and they just don't know what to do. And they can't tell you. You have to do it yourself.
You have to do it yourself. It is an inner sunrise for each one of us when we discover that we do have the power to control these suggestions that are coming to us, and we can replace those suggestions if we want to with ideas that are much more health-giving and life-affirming for us. And sure enough, we all start out as kids. You just said it so well. And there's a reason for that, I believe. And the reason that we unknowingly take in all these suggestions about the limitations of this world is that we can call ourselves part of this world. If we didn't do it, we wouldn't be part of the world. When we're that little infant, just opened its eyes, and before we know what the word for wall is, we notice nobody ever walks through the wall in this dimension. They always use the door. There's hypnotism at work the first day that our eyes are open on this planet. So we accept all these lies later on. 21 years later, we're in college and we're taking quantum mechanics, and we see the wall is empty space, our body is empty space. There's no such thing as matter. All there is at the heart is energies. Relationships between connections is what one physicist told me was an electron. Relationship between connections. But we start out giving our consent to the belief that it's solid. If we didn't do that, we couldn't live on this planet. We couldn't play on this playground.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got so much to learn, and we have so much fun, I believe, as spiritual creatures. We have so much fun overcoming what we have taken for half our lives to be the limits of the world around us. And then we begin to discover, hey, those aren't really limits. I can push those limits. And all I have to do is just tune in first to that, those levels of myself that say, you're a spiritual creature. You're not a material creature. You have dominion over the world of what seems to be. And then how many thousands of books there are of people who have written about having the same experience and beginning to overcome their sense of limitation in the world. And others who write about what our true spiritual nature is and how that's a practical advantage to us every day. I'm never much interested in theory. Does it work in practice? And this book is a story about someone who discovers in practice. And what you said at first, that it's very hard to do this, absolutely right, it's hard to do it. But nevertheless, if we do it, we have these remarkable results.
There is a paragraph in your book, and I'm going to quote it exactly. There is a lovely woman by the name of Dee that's having a conversation with Jamie, the main character, the pilot. She says, every time we think or say, I am, I feel, I want, I think, I know, you look, you can, you are, you can't, you ought, I should, I will. This is, this isn't. Every time we use some value judgment, good, bad, better, evil, best, beautiful, useless, terrific, right, wrong, terrible, enchanting, magnificent, waste of time. Every suggestion intensifies itself.
Yeah.
Those are powerful words, and if we can wrap our minds around them gently, just that little grouping of words, and there, of course, there's a lot more in your book to mentally chew on and just think about it as we're mentally chewing on it. The fact is, how we state our words makes a difference, and how we respond to other people's statements makes a difference.
Absolutely,
and
right.
What we want to accept. I just love, I'll share a story with you quickly.
Yeah.
And I know I'm taking away some of your thunder, perhaps, but not
no,
really.
No, 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 I want to listen.
There's a Dr. Bill Hornaday. He was a minister down in California. And he would go in and visit people in the hospital. And he was visiting this one woman. And she had been given a diagnosis of a terminal illness. And the doctor came in and was looking very dour, and Reverend Hornaday was there in the room, and everybody was just a beautiful person. And so she very cheerfully asked the doctor, Doc, what are my chances? Because she had to go through some very special surgery and treatment and so on and so forth. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you, but you've got about a 10% chance. She said, good, I'll take it.
Yeah.
She got well. Now, that blows medical theory right to the moon.
Sure.
And it's such a compliment to what you're seeing in your book.
Well, I think so. Yeah, and I think a lot of people have been discovering this, particularly over the last, maybe 30 or 40 years. The climate of thought today is radically different than it was 40 years ago.
Oh, very much so.
You know, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. We'd be carried off in little nets if we dared have it privately, let alone on the radio.
That's true.
But so much has changed now, and so many people have been willing to say, this is my experience. If you read a book like Life After Life by Raymond Moody about people who have had near-death experience, mm-hmm. almost invariably they're starting their story by saying, I have never told anyone this because I thought they'd call me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then as if the first few brave people started talking about this, of being out of their body and seeing the physicians work to try to resuscitate their body in an operating room and listening to what the doctors were saying and what some of them were doing and things that they would have no way to know because clinically they were either dead or in no state to receive any information. Then as more people started saying, yeah, that happened to me too, gradually this consciousness has spread across our culture, and now more and more of us are able to say or willing to say, I've had a few strange experiences too, and know that we're not crazy, that those strange experiences are the expression of our spiritual nature that are starting to come through where once we thought, oh, we were only material creatures and subject to chemical inputs.
I absolutely love different points in your book. You have this one section where there's the question, if you think suggestions crazy, what about science? And this is when Jamie's getting information. There's not just four dimensions here in space-time, folks, because you see there's really 11, but of course seven of them are wrapped up in tiny little balls, so we don't see those. But they're there. I mean, you have this whimsical yet informative format that you bring these subtleties through. And to me, it is mental refreshment when I'm reading it. It's just like, ah, that's true. Okay, let's go to the next page.
Well,
it's wonderful.
Well, from time to time, we get these astonishing statements from the worlds of science that are literally like that. There really are 11 dimensions, but the other ones are just wrapped. almost that is word for word out of the Science Digest, and it just struck me. This stuff is crazy, and yet we don't call our scientists crazy. They're mm-hmm. working with excellent math, cutting-edge math. They have research facilities that are so remarkable that they can begin to prove these things.
Mm-hmm.
And we, the general public, just have to take in a breath when we hear what they're saying. And at the same time, when we have that kind of research coming from science, we have our own laboratories, our own lifetimes in which to experiment with these ideas. If it is true that we do stand guard at the gateway to our consciousness, well, let's practice with it. Next time someone says, this world is really no good or it's all going straight to hell, we can say, I don't buy that. I think mm-hmm. this world is a lovely place. It's a schoolroom. It gives us tests. Some of the tests are extremely difficult, but what fun it is to pass them. Let me tell you about the time, and then we start sharing stories with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, I'll get a letter back. Books, as you know, are very often one-way communications, but once in a while, you get something back. I had a letter years ago that I've always remembered from a guy who said, thank you very much for writing Illusions, that he found the book when he was drunk and freezing to death on a sidewalk in Manhattan.
Ah.
And someone, when they can't sell a book, they tear the cover of the paperback off and they throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And he had found one of those copies of the book that had missed the garbage can and fell over the side. And he happened to be in that situation at what he thought was the end of his life. And by coincidence, of course it always seems to be coincidence, the wind blew the page open and he reached for this and he found something that he needed to know at that time. And then, whatever it was, 8 or 9 years later, he was in a position to write this little thank you note to me. Of course, all the work was his, all the change
mm-hmm.
was his, all the understanding
mm-hmm.
was his, but he took the time to write this real sweet note to say how much that idea meant to him at that time. And the same thing happens, I think, to all of us. What seems to be coincidence isn't coincidence at all. It's gotten to the point now where I like to meet, when I meet people, I say, if you don't mind, could you share with me how you met your mate? And almost invariably, it's some unbelievable coincidence. I was just in Portland a few weeks ago, and the escort that Sabrina and I had that was taking us to television shows and book signings, and we asked her, Marilyn, how did you meet your husband? She'd been married for 39 years. And she said, well, that's strange that you ask that, because there's no way that it could have happened. I was walking past a sorority sister on a college campus. She was talking to a guy who had flown up from California. He was looking to have a double date with someone, and her sorority sister looked up, saw Marilyn walking by, and said, well, how about Marilyn? She could join us. Wham! 39 years later, they're still married. What kind of coincidence, what kind of power leads us on these paths that intersect in these just wonderful ways? I mean, literally wonderful ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that that I think is pretty nice and that I enjoy experimenting with.
People are fascinating, and I think that's one of the gifts, one of the many gifts that your book, Hypnotizing Maria, brings, is that getting in touch with making it okay to allow life to express itself. And so many times, I know I've done it, we stress, we fuss, we really think that we're supposed to have the tough stuff. We're supposed, and I'm not saying that experience doesn't challenge us. It does.
Yeah.
But often, if we can just make it okay and look back on the accomplishments we've achieved, good, bad, and indifferent,
sure,
and realize it's all part and parcel of who we are as individuals, and that's what makes someone stand out to any of us. And that's what Hypnotizing Maria does. You've done just such a marvelous job with this book, and I'm going to quote again from your book. There's the so what. We create our inner state of being in what seems to be outside ourselves. Nobody's passive. Nobody's a bystander. Nobody's a victim. We create. Now, what power that gives to an individual. Some awesome, awesome awareness. But at the same time, it can be very scary because it means that we have to be back in touch with that childlike part of ourselves that says this is a world of magic, and
yes,
I can be the magician, I can be the creator. Uh-oh, that means I have to be responsible. We come back to the big R. That means
absolutely
I have to
right
be responsible. Well, maybe not today. I think I'll check out. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yep, that is so true, and we're always having a little tug-of-war with this part of us that wants to curl up in a ball and believe that we're victims, and the other part that knows we do change this world of appearances around us. Someone a long time ago, listening to what you just said about how scary it is, someone told me, anything worthwhile is always a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that is so true. Whether it's new ideas or flying a new airplane for the first time or going into a learning experience where we want to learn something, we don't know anything about it, we feel a little scared. It's anything worthwhile is always scary.
That's
so
including going on a diet and being told you could never have chocolate for as long as you live. That's scary.
Yeah.
Oh, Richard, you're wonderful. And I'll close. We've just got a great, it's just been wonderful having you on the air. But I want to mention this one line in your book. Coincidence shall lead me to others who bring lessons for me to learn and for whom I have lessons to give as well. And you, my friend, you have done exactly that with this wonderful book, Hypnotizing Maria. Once you open the first page and you start reading, whether or not you like planes, have any desire to be a pilot, that's not the key. It's going to take you into the world of awareness that is so comfortable. Once you open the book up, you're not going to be able to put it down. Richard, do you have a website people can go to?
No, I have. There's just one page with a picture of a book on it, and that's it. Nothing to click. That's it.
That's all.
Right.
Well, then just go to the bookstores and get the book. That's what you need to do.
There you go. Yeah, I love Richard, to share this idea.
Oh, yes. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
You, sweetheart, thank you so much for having me, Donna.
It's been a joy. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, this would make a great holiday gift for a friend, a birthday gift, someone that really thinks that they don't have much to look forward to. This is a wonderful read. Hypnotizing Maria by Richard Buck, the author of Jonathan Livingston Seagull and the fabulous book, Illusions. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the worldwide toll-free number to call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I want to mention to you that I'm going to be, for those of you listening in Alaska, I'm going to be in Fairbanks and Anchorage. Monday through Wednesday, I'll be in Fairbanks, and then Thursday through Sunday, I will be in Anchorage, and I'm going to be available for private appointments. And you can just give me a call at my office, which is 800-872-8852, and we can set up some time to meet. And then in November, there's a special appearance. It's being done at the Dickens Festival for those of you in the state of Washington, Tacoma, Washington. In fact, it's in my own local area, which is very nice. But this is a festival that is totally oriented towards the family. It's a great way to get ready for the holidays and to participate in some absolutely fabulous activities. I'm going to be at the King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma. It's very well known, and I'm going to be there doing many consultations from 12 noon until 4, and part of the proceeds, and of course I'm going to be in costume. Ah, yes, we've got to have those fancy looking dresses. I love it. Anytime I can dress up in costume, I just love to participate. So I'm going to be there, and No appointments necessary, and part of the proceeds will be going to a charity that is sponsored by the Dickens Festival. So you can just go into the Internet, Dickens Festival, Tacoma, Washington, and get all the information, all the details about the wonderful events that are going on and the contests and all kinds of things that are going to be happening. So again, that's November the 21st. My word, the time just seems to be zipping on by. Isn't it amazing how it seems like it just speeds up? Maybe it's my imagination, but you know, I've been talking to young people that say the same thing. We have people that are in junior high that are preparing for college, and they're doing this, and they're doing that, and they're doing the other. I was talking to a mom that has a 14-year-old, and she said, my gracious, where did this year go? I feel like I am getting up in the morning, I've got to go to work, I get home, I take my kids to music classes, whatever needs to be done, and then it just seems like we're in this go, go, go patterning all the time. And it does. It just, you seem to blink and you wonder, wait a minute, I haven't talked to this friend for a long time, or I haven't done this. And of course, my husband loves to tease me about the fact that I have no sense of time anyway. He says, Donna, do you remember such and such? Mm-hmm, yeah, that was just a short time ago. No, Donna, that was 2 or 3 years ago. And it just, there's just so much that's going on, it seems, just absolutely amazing to me in today's world how much we are able to pack in to our world, and a lot of that has to do with technology. But I think sometimes we need to be able to take a breather. Sometimes we need to make it okay that we don't look at a clock, that we don't set an alarm, that we just take time, as the old saying goes, to chill out a bit. And it's amazing what it enables you to do. It enables you to sort of get your bearings and pull yourself together. And here, as we're in the fall season of the year and the temperatures, at least here in the Pacific Northwest, are crisp and cool. I know if you're in Phoenix, Arizona, it's like in the 90s. But here in the Pacific Northwest, there's all kinds of activity going on with nature. Little squirrels are out, and they're just busily collecting all the acorns they possibly can and seeds and whatever they can find, because they know when winter comes, food's going to be very hard to come by. So they're out doing their due diligence for those few months that everything's going to be relatively quiet for them. And then we've got birds that are doing their migrations, like the pileated woodpeckers. They're coming through. They're here for a short period of time. But if you don't take the time to observe, if you don't take the time to just look, you'll miss everything that's going on. You'll miss all of the glorious colors. There are flowers that are blooming in people's gardens, and I thought, gee whiz, this is too late. We passed one garden when we were out walking our two Scotties, Victor and Kinsey, and here are these iris in full bloom, brilliant colors. They are just gorgeous in a garden that has already been sort of cut back for the coming winter months. And here are these, you know, specks of color that are there, and then the trees. It looks like someone went and took an airbrush just within 24 hours and said, okay, I think I'm going to spray a little vermilion over here and we'll slap a little gold over there. And it's changing every day. But there's something peaceful and restful about that. Unlike our ancestors, where when we had to be on the land and things would just literally shut down, and when it got to be short days and long dark hours, you really couldn't do very much outside, so you busied yourself with things inside your home. Well, we still do that, but we're going all year round. We don't give ourselves breaks, and I think it's something we need to remember to do periodically, and I think it's a fun thing to do. Sometimes just getting together with friends and not even turning on a television, maybe playing a game, or just picking up the telephone and calling someone and saying, you know, you've been on my mind. I just thought I'd like to just sit and chat. We've got cell phones. We can do it anytime, anyplace, anywhere. I did that with a friend when I was in Phoenix on my layover flying back home, that picked up the phone and I called her, and we were able to have a nice chat for about a half hour. Come to find out, she had been thinking of me, and my husband said, oh, what wonderful timing that you called. These are the magical moments in life. These are the moments that we get our ahas in. And when I was listening to Richard talking about these characters, these energies, where he said he'll try to force something and push something and he'll just be going along and somehow or another just doesn't work. And then all of a sudden it's like, click, click, here we go. Here's the data download. And he gets it. It really makes it easy and he's able to pull it all together. And I think frequently we need to make it okay to be in rhythm with ourselves. And it's not easy to do if we're constantly on the go. And sometimes maybe you just need to take time to peel some apples, make an apple pie, sit back with a hot cup of tea or coffee, and maybe share it with a friend or just yourself, whatever makes you feel good. But realize that you're entitled to those quiet moments. And with fall, I strongly encourage you to go out for a walk, to really smell, to be aware, to feel. Oh, there's so much beauty out there to experience. After all, when you listen to most of the stuff that's going on in media, you don't hear a whole bunch of that. But take time. I want to share a story with you that's a true story by Carolindo Jankel. I thought this was just absolutely marvelous because it just fits right with Hypnotizing Maria. She said, Carolinda said that her husband, Bob, had been having some health problems and they had really gotten bad and he was very worried that he might have to give up doing the very thing that he loved, and that was teaching art at a middle school. Now, his doctor that he had known for years wanted him to see a specialist, but like so many of us, we go, gee whiz, who am I going to go to? Well, that's exactly what Bob was concerned about. How is he going to find the right kind of doctor, and how is he going to know that the doctor is right for him? Well, Carolinda said she, when she thought back to the beginning of their marriage, whenever they traveled to galleries and art fairs throughout the state of California and they were selling Bob's work, she said, we'd pack the car before dawn with his abstract paintings along with a metal cash box for the money we hoped to make. She said, we're pretty carefree then. It was exciting to show his work and meet other artists, even if we didn't make much money. What mattered was finding people who liked his work. Now, there was a particular time at a street fair in Westwood near UCLA. They had sold nothing all day, and you can imagine how devastating that was. They were packing up their car to leave when there was a little boy and his dad that came up to them and asked, how much is the painting that you've got sitting out here? So they told him, and he asked if we had time to show him some more. Well, can you imagine how exciting that is to an artist? They said, of course, and they started unpacking the car. Well, this man, and with his little boy, ended up buying 8 paintings. It just was so exciting. Now, they were a young couple. It was an exciting weekend for them. And her husband said that was a real godsend. Now, here they are in their mature years, trying to make a decision, and she didn't know what to say to her husband. Well, she just held positive thoughts for him and just knew everything was going to work out in its own way. And he goes off to meet this new doctor, and he comes back, and she said, oh, he was just absolutely bright and bushy-tailed and just so happy. So she asked him what happened, because this was not the man that had left earlier in the day. He had been very depressed. Comes back, not that way at all. Well, her husband said that he'd been very reluctant to enter the specialist's office that had been recommended to him by his personal physician. He was sitting in the waiting room and was looking through magazines, and he was just really under a lot of stress. Then he decided he was going to look around the room. He saw the patients, looked at the receptionist, but was totally preoccupied with, what if this isn't the right doctor? Then he lifted his head and he looked up, and what he saw answered his concerns. What did he see? Hanging on the office wall, beautifully displayed, were the 8 paintings that he had sold to a man and his little boy so many years before. Those very same 8 paintings. So he knew he was with the right doctor. I couldn't pass that story up. This is Donna. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Our worldwide toll-free number is 888-815-9756. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Andrew Harvey. We're going to be talking about his publication, The Hope. We are going to be talking about how we can be involved in sacred activism. So be sure you tune in. And then on Friday, we're going to be discussing sign language. Now, that may sound like an odd subject to talk about on a radio show, but I think you're going to be fascinated with the story that my guest, Christine Jenkins, is going to be sharing with us. It is a universal language, believe it or not, and we're going to find out more on Friday. Do you have a pad of paper and a pen handy? I hope you do, because I found a recipe for spicy pumpkin seeds. My goodness, everywhere we go, we're seeing pumpkins all over the place. Yes, we're getting closer and closer to the magnificent holiday called Halloween, which is the favorite of so many people. My goodness, yards are beginning to get decorated up. Scarecrows are popping up all over the place. Well, of course, you're going to want to have a pumpkin on your deck or wherever you put it. And we have now battery lights that we can put inside a pumpkin so we don't have to worry about candles burning on the inside. But there's something to do with real pumpkin seeds. And lots of times you want to have an activity that maybe you and some friends and some kids can be involved with. This is a spicy pumpkin seed, and I think you could alter this recipe in any way that you want. But I really, really liked this. So I thought I would share it with you today. Here are the ingredients that you'll need. And by the way, pumpkin seeds are noted for helping arthritic inflammation, and also they're good for lowering cholesterol. Any of your seeds typically are very good at this. Your nuts and your seeds are very healthy to eat. Well, this is what you're going to need: a nonstick cooking spray, one large egg white only, 2 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon of sugar. 2 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon of sugar. You're going to need 1 1/4 teaspoons of kosher salt. 1 1/4 teaspoons of kosher salt. 1 1/4 teaspoons of sweet smoked paprika. 1 1/4 teaspoons sweet smoked paprika. 3 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. I told you it's going to be spicy. 3 1/4 teaspoon. If you like it a little bit hotter, just give it a couple extra shakes. 1 1/4 teaspoon, or maybe less, depending on your taste buds, of cinnamon, but 1 1/4 teaspoon is a safe amount. And then 2 cups of shelled raw pumpkin seeds. 2 cups shelled raw pumpkin seeds. Now, you heat your oven to 300 degrees, and what you're going to do is take a baking sheet, you want to line it with parchment paper, and you want to spray the parchment paper with cooking spray. Then you're going to whisk briskly the egg white in a medium bowl until it gets nice and foamy. Then you want to add your sugar, your salt, your paprika, your cayenne, and your cinnamon. You want to whisk it together well. Then stir in the seeds to coat, and then lift them up with a slotted spoon, allowing them to drain and spread in a single layer on a baking sheet. Now what you want to do is discard the liquid that's left over. Just pour it out. Then you're going to roast the seeds, and you toss them several times until they get puffy, and they're just beginning to brown. It's going to take you about 25 minutes, so you need a good pair of oven mitts that you can use. Then you transfer the baking sheet to a wire rack to cool completely, and then you very gently pry the seeds from the parchment paper, and you can break up any clumps into smaller amounts. And they last about 2 weeks in an airtight container, and that's going to be enough for maybe 8 people, or if you're one that munches, you might well be the only one that eats them. I don't know. But what a wonderful recipe to have. And again, this is something that's a good basic recipe. And if you don't like really spicy, then try something that is not going to be spicy in the way of seasonings and flavors. But I think it's a great recipe, and it's perfect for this time of year. And what a nice project to get the kids involved with, having them, you know, husk the pumpkin seeds so that they're involved with it, and then they get to munch out on it. So again, you can always adjust the seasonings any way that you want. I wanted to share with you also a little bit of information that I touched on yesterday, and that is when you are in an emergency situation and perhaps you want to use a phone, what do you do? Most of the time, people freeze in particular situations, not because they want to, but because they haven't had any rehearsal. They've had no practice. And it's amazing when you visualize and you practice, you can respond to situations the way you're supposed to. It's something called repetition. And you can run scenarios through your mind so that you are going to respond quickly and easily. One of the reasons why people's faces go white when they're scared, it's because the body defense mechanism, when they're in a situation that is like a trauma, it redirects the blood flow from its periphery to its core. So it affects our fine motor skills and our fingers, and even our communication capacity to speak is going to be affected. It's good to practice dialing for help in an emergency, but also to rehearse what you would say. And this is what we train our children to do, right? We say, if they have to call 911, we go this over and over and over this with them, say that my name is such and such, this is where I am, I need help. I mean, you train them, right? Well, we need to do the same thing for ourselves. Practice makes everything more automatic, could call it mechanical, and the stress is diminished. So the suggestion has been made when you want to practice for an emergency, saying, this is blah, 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 I'm at XYZ address, there's an intruder in the house, or I've had a stroke, or whatever you might want to do. And just disconnect your phone and make yourself and even your family do the drill over and over again. And then have them repeat it like with their cell phones. And there's people that have worked with police dispatchers, and they say many times they call them the elderly obscene phone call. It's an older person who gets so frightened that he or she can't speak, and all they hear is heavy breathing. So it's an important thing. Practice, practice, practice. Be prepared. Think things through so that should an emergency ever come up, whether it's for you or someone else, you'll be able to do what you need to do smoothly, easily, and calmly. This is Donna Sebo. I just hope you have an absolutely fabulous, fabulous day and evening. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be right back here on BBSRadio.com, same time, same place, tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.